This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson, visiting WBHM in Birmingham. What are some of the things that Alabama is known for? Hank Williams Jr., Lynyrd Skynyrd, Harper Lee, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird, the Civil Rights Movement, Taylor Hicks, the guy that won season 5 of American Idol. Yes, but there's another really big one that seems to bring lots of Alabamians together. Football. Specifically, the University of Alabama Crimson Tide. They've been a top 5 team in the SEC for the last decade. Last weekend, they lost to LSU, Louisiana State, for the first time in 8 years. What does that mean for Alabama's football legacy and the team's ability to unite fans across cultural lines? Joining us here in studio at WBHM is Ben Flanagan, entertainment and sports producer for AL.com. He's the host of the podcast Bammers, about Alabama football fan culture. Ben, welcome to 1A.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us at WBHM is Hannah Stevens, an analyst and contributor for Roll Tide Wire and University of Alabama's Sign Girl. We'll explain what that is in a little bit. Hannah, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Ben, let's back up to the game on Saturday. That's the game that LSU beat the Crimson Tide in. Talk about what you saw at the game as it relates to the fandom. Forget about what happened on the field. What about what happened on the stands and in the parking lot of the tailgate?
I'm trying to forget about what happened on the field.
I'm trying to help.
No, thank you. it was a unique day on campus, to be sure. Obviously, everybody knows that President Trump visited the campus, and so that set the city and the state really into motion in terms of the anticipation for not only the game, which is really all anybody cares about during the fall, but the fact that he was going to be here really heightened everything. I mean, it's obviously already a stressful atmosphere and a stressful place, and people are on edge and excited, but you add that to the mix, and it's just on steroids in Tuscaloosa. But what I saw was actually quite pleasant compared to what I thought I might see, just in terms of the day. With all of that anticipation, it all happened largely without incident. And everybody, there were a lot of people, and there was a lot of chaos in terms of logistics. Traffic was gridlocked to an extent, but it was a beautiful day. ESPN was in town with 2 shows. There were so many people, and they just really went out there and enjoyed themselves like it was any other game. And there was just more security. So I was a little surprised by that.
It seems like the folks who were at the stadium were more concerned with whether the team won or lost than with the kind of political aspect, mm-hmm. except for somebody brought like a large, like a Trump baby balloon that got popped. Somebody knifed it, and now they've kind of raised bail money for him. That seems to be about as political as it got. Like, the game was really the centerpiece.
Yeah, that's right. There were definitely, there was evidence of, you know, pro-Trump support, right? Like on the tailgating scene on the quad, where you could see signage, you could see buttons, you could see signs on the game day and ACC Nation set that were Trump-themed. You saw sprinkles of people who were anti-Trump, but not that many, pretty greatly outweighed by the folks who support Trump.
Hannah Stevens, you got your start as an Alabama super fan. You got a lot of attention for the signs you held up at the games. Talk about how you came to be known as Sign Girl.
Well, that all started really in high school. My dad was one of the coaches at Squim High School in Squim, Washington, and I was just always a very passionate, outgoing person. And so when I went to University of Alabama as a student, I really wanted to kind of keep that, and that was just kind of ingrained in my DNA, was to be a super fan. So I never did it for attention. I did it because that was just who I was. And so I was an athlete my freshman year. I was a rower at Alabama. So I became friends with a lot of the football players, the softball players, basketball players. So I'd go to those games, and it all started with just a face paint, the script A on my face, and then it became coming up with signs. And so over time, it just kind of became something that I was known for. But really, I did it for my friends on the field who were playing, and, you know, they would look up and they would ask, like on Friday, "Hey, what's your sign?" I'm like, you can't know yet. Just look up from the field.
What were some of you, can you say them on the radio?
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What were some of your better signs?
The one that went viral the first time was "Saban, we'll stay for 60 if you stay forever," and that was when he was basically criticizing the student section for leaving early, and that was when kind of rumors were going about that he may be going to Texas.
Nick Saban, the head coach.
Yes, Nick Saban. And then another one I did was, Ohio State, no, Tom Brady's footballs are harder than Ohio State's schedule. And so that was really with Deflategate and Ohio State being
good.
Talk. And then I guess another one quickly is Ronda Rousey's fights lasted longer than Auburn's chance at national title. And so I just try to come up with ones that kind of would, I guess, aggravate certain fan bases and then also kind of like hype up our players, you know.
We got voicemails from several of you about your college fandom. Here are a listener in Florida and a listener in Michigan. We mashed them up together. Here's what they left in our inbox.
My name is Betty, and I'm calling from Naperville, Illinois. But I grew up in the South, and I don't know if you know that three religions in the South, Methodist, Baptist, and college football. I went to the University of Tennessee, but I lived in Alabama for many years. And so the rivalry there was very important to all Southerners.
My name is Tyler. I'm calling from Indian River, Michigan. As an alumnus of the University of Alabama, I grew up in Alabama football culture. All of my friends, all of my family members, basically everybody I knew was an Alabama football fan or one of those poor, unfortunate Auburn fans that we still love and care about, but we disagree on a few essential things. So Alabama football is something that even affects me here in northern Michigan, where my congregation has all become Alabama fans as a result of my ministry here. Roll Tide.
Tyler, you evangelized Alabama? You converted to people in your... Hey, Tyler, Betty, I ain't mad at you. Thank you for sharing your stories with us. Ben, I first of all, I love the fact that Tyler was very sympathetic to Auburn fans in that tone that you use for, like, your uncle who comes to Thanksgiving dinner with a roll of tinfoil and not for the leftovers, but it's for his head. Like, that's very sweet. Bless your heart.
Yeah, Alabama fans specifically, very familiar with that tone, to be sure. But very interesting just to hear people talk about the culture of Alabama football and how, I mean, Alabama football is the culture for a lot of people when it comes to the state of Alabama, especially Tuscaloosa. It's a reflection of that. It's a reflection of the community, and people just have a lot of pride in the football.
And we should be clear, Tuscaloosa is where the main campus is.
That's right.
I know plenty of people who look at college football fandom in general. Even at the schools, you know, when I went to the University of Miami, I graduated from UM the year that we won the national championship. We had an undefeated season in 2001, 2002. And of course, when I left, it all went down the drain. But there were even people at UM who were like, oh, God, football, really? Like, it's sucking up all the money at the university. Like, couldn't you put more of this money into scholarships? This is exactly what's wrong with higher education. We put so much attention on these teams. We pay the head football coaches, the athletic directors, millions of dollars. Meanwhile, there are all these students who can't get scholarships, and the priorities are all in the wrong place. Why do you care? Why is this such a big deal? Why are your priorities out of whack? What do you say back?
I would just say tradition is just an important part of Alabama football, and again, that culture in Tuscaloosa and throughout the state, and anybody who's a fan throughout the country and world. I mean, it's just something that guides people's lives and personalities. It's something they look forward to year-round, and when the fall hits, it just is such a huge part of their lives. I mean, people make the joke often that religion and football sort of converge down in Alabama. And I mean, to an extent, it's pretty serious, and that's probably true. I mean, I did an episode of the podcast once where I talked to a young man who gave up watching Alabama football because he felt like he was putting more of his focus on that than he was his actual faith. And so he had to just let it go. And he made great points about the fact that you spend more of your money on this thing, you pay attention to this thing, you talk about it with your friends every day of the week, you stress about it. So how much more importance are you placing on this than this other thing that you tell people that you prioritize?
Hannah, what are some of the aspects of Alabama football culture that you learned early on as a student?
I'll never forget this day. It was my first day on campus. It was Bama Bound. It's kind of where you're introduced as like a freshman, your introduction to the University of Alabama. And you had to learn like the fight song. You had to learn all these things that I never knew. And I didn't realize how big of a deal it was until the first game. And I'm like, oh my word, like, I don't know every word. And everyone in the stadium knows the words to Rammer Jammer and Dixieland Delight and all this. And you realize that's part of the culture. So I think that's something that over time, you realize how special it was to university alone and how much that impacted the players on the field. Like, they looked forward to that because that was their pump up. That was like hearing Dixieland Delight and hearing, you know, Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee too. That was something that pump them up.
I want to talk more about how this culture relates to football and how it extends more broadly when we continue our conversation with Hannah Stevens, analyst and contributor for Roll Tide Wire, and Ben Flanagan, entertainment and sports producer for AL.com and the host of the podcast Bammers. We'll zoom out a little bit and look at football culture across the country, some of the lines that it helps to erase, and some of the lines that remain pretty bright. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Uber. Uber is committed to safety and to continuously raising the bar to help make safer journeys for everyone. For starters, all drivers are background checked before their first ride and screened on an ongoing basis. And now Uber has introduced a brand new safety feature called Ride Check, which can detect if a trip goes unusually off course and check in to provide support. To learn more about Uber's commitment to safety, visit uber.com/safety.
I'm Peter Sagal. Sure, you're enjoying this NPR podcast filled with important and useful information, but is it the most important and useful information? Like this.
The museum actually went and made a synthetic version of dinosaur breath.
It's Axe body spray, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Wait, wait, don't tell me, from NPR. Listen now and share with your friends.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Birmingham. We're discussing football in Alabama with Ben Flanagan of AL.com and Hannah Stevens of Roll Tide Wire. Elspeth wrote on our Facebook page, "As an alum of the University of Alabama, I hated the assumption from others that the primary reason I went there was for the football team. It's a university. I was there to study and get a degree. I enjoyed my time there and my education was very good, but I didn't go to a single football game." Ben, there was recently a piece in the Times that showed how participation in high school and college football across the country is declining, except in Alabama, Mississippi, and Pennsylvania. What do you make of that? Does that surprise you?
A little bit. I mean, I would say that it's declining a little bit at Alabama. There have been issues on campus in terms of students coming to the games, staying at the games. Hannah mentioned it earlier in terms of Saban even having to raise awareness and encourage students to stay and create more incentive for them to stay at games. But no, it doesn't surprise me that it's not happening as much in Alabama because, again, we just go back to how it reflects the culture and it just kind of is what it is. But it's true, like, there are those attitudes in Tuscaloosa and throughout the state that there are plenty of people who don't care about Alabama football, and that's fine. But I think that even the folks—
Is it really fine, though?
Well, I think even those folks would they would acknowledge that Alabama football and the national brand that it has become, and largely global brand that it has become, has created a lot of other opportunities throughout the campus. It has helped in recruiting people. Even if they don't care about football, I think it still plays a pretty large role in why people come, because it's just such a valuable part of the experience.
Let me add one more voice to the conversation. Joining us from Emory University in Atlanta is Aaron Tarver, an associate professor of philosophy and the author of The Eye in Team, Sports, Fandom, and the Reproduction of Identity. Professor Tarver, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
We should say, first of all, in the interest of full disclosure, which team you are a fan of?
Go Tigers.
What are your thoughts on Saturday?
I grew up in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and I am an LSU fan. My experience of LSU fandom growing up was always waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I couldn't really ever believe that we were actually going to win the game on Saturday. Even after it happened, I texted my father, "I still don't believe that this just happened." So I was delighted, of course, but it was a surreal experience.
So college football was a big deal when you were growing up.
Certainly. And I sort of occupy an interesting position, I suppose, because like Katie, I grew up going to games and I grew up painting my face and dyeing my hair in the team colors to celebrate LSU. But then I went on to become a philosophy professor. I ended up writing this book to sort of bring those two parts of my life together that for many people are diametrically opposed.
Let me get to another voicemail as a demonstration of just how far some people will go to be around their fellow fans. Here's what Bronson left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Bronson from Bellingham, Washington. I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, home of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, as a diehard Gator fan. And there's nothing like walking into a slugfest of an SEC game on a hot, steamy Saturday afternoon in the South. It defines a region. It defines multiple generations and brings together people. I went to my first game when I was probably 8 months old and still get goosebumps just thinking of the feeling walking into the Swamp. I went to the University of Colorado at Boulder and would skip those games to watch Gator games on TV. Even when living in London, I found a Gator bar of about 150 Gator fans watching every game. There's nothing like SEC football.
Clearly not. Bronson, thank you for sharing your story with us. Professor Tarver, step back a little bit from just the intrinsic feeling that fans have, do we know anything about the psychology behind sports fandom, behind what it is that makes people so drawn to sports or certain teams?
Absolutely. So one of the things that's really interesting to me is the wide variety of practices that fans engage in their sports fandom. When you think about all of the different kinds of things that fans do, it is quite thoroughgoing. So, for example, fans, of course, attend these grand spectacles that we know of. The caller mentioned going to the Swamp. Of course, Alabama fans go to Bryant-Denny Stadium. And there's something that looks rather like a religious ritual that goes on there, right? So people show up dressed in special clothing that has particular colors associated with the symbolism of their teams. They engage in chants and ritual songs. But beyond the space of the stadium, fans are also engaged in everyday practices of their fandom. So, for example, fans very often engage in a variety of practices associated with knowledge acquisition. So that is to say, they follow their team in newspapers or by watching ESPN or consuming sports media. They memorize statistics associated with their team or their favorite players. They know about the records of their rivals and that sort of thing. They also engage in what we could call symbolic performances. So fans will, as I mentioned, wear particular special vestments, we could say, at the stadium, but they also do things like decorate their home or their office in team paraphernalia. They also engage in a variety of discursive habits that are particular to either their team or sport. So fans have to be initiated into the proper ways of talking about their teams, not only in those specific chants, but also into what patterns of speech are acceptable to talk about the team and which are not. And that tends to vary by region and by particular fan base. So just for example, if you think about NFL fans, it's acceptable in Chicago and Philadelphia to say boo the home team if you are disappointed with their performance, but it would not be acceptable in a variety of other spaces. All of these things go toward cultivating a particular sense of self on the part of the fans and that self's relation to the community of which they are a part.
Now, is that uniquely different from, say, you know, religious culture or American culture? I mean, if I was in any number of parts of the country, any number of black communities, and I looked at somebody and said, God is good, they would respond all the time.
All the time.
Right. So is it a different kind of, you know, of shared language, of shared ritual with sports, or is it that same kind of affinity seeking just in a different venue?
So it's quite similar, I would say. It, of course, is compatible with a person maintaining also religious practice. But if you think about it, both religious practice and sports fandom share in common the fact that they require specific kinds of disciplines, like there are rules that one follows. And at the same time, they share in common the production of a particular sense of belonging in a community. And whereas in perhaps eras past, more and more people used things like religious tradition, specifically associated with the church or Christendom or a specific church to cultivate their sense of self and their belonging in a particular community. Today in the United States, and especially in the American South, we see that sports fandom is one of the primary ways that Americans tell themselves who they are and to which community they belong.
Hannah, there are some schools where, you know, the college football team, the college basketball team, sometimes the college baseball team has helped to break a lot of cultural barriers, particularly color barriers. You know, if you look at, you know, the UCLA men's basketball team under John Wooden is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. And there, I've heard numerous accounts about how Alabama football helped to break some of those barriers. Do you see where some of those barriers are still lingering, where some of them seem to have broken completely? Like, where is that impact strongest or weakest to you?
I think that this is a hard question. I think it's a good question, though, because I think it's important to note that we are in Alabama, and so I think it is something that is consistently talked about with breaking barriers, and I think it's something that football has helped do historically. I mean, we all know how football has evolved, even who's playing the game. And I think it's been something cool to even watch, even since Nick Saban's been there and how he's recruited and what he's done. And I think it's important to be a part of a program where you see everyone getting an opportunity to play, regardless of background, regardless of race, regardless of religious beliefs. And I think that's something Nick Saban has kind of evolved in his culture is, you know, he loves these players like they're his sons. And he would go down with them. And so to see that, I think Alabama's done a good job in every sport. You look at basketball, even softball, and like going back from something we talked about earlier, I think with Alabama winning, it's allowed other programs to maybe recruit in different parts of the country they haven't before, and even different parts of the world. I mean, men's basketball is a worldwide recruiting complex. I mean, that's something they've done is they've recruited all around the world. So I think it has opened up doors, and I think it's something that we're continuing to see. And for me, it's cool to even see them go to the next level, even see these guys that come to Alabama. I mean, Josh Jacobs is probably one of the most amazing stories you'll ever hear from University of Alabama, a kid who literally senior year slept in his car and is now breaking Oakland Raiders rookie records and had the opportunity that Nick Saban saw in him that no one else did.
A few more quick comments before we pause. Wes commented, unifying, Alabama is split between two schools. Ben, what about that?
That's true, but I mean, you've heard the term divided household, I'm sure. I mean, there are plenty of people in this state who are married where each spouse cheers for a different team, and they have to live with it. They have to come together. I mean, yeah, Alabama and Auburn, they're enemies on the football field and whatever game or sport they happen to be playing, but everybody's an Alabamian in the end. And I think most folks with good heads on their shoulders, they can come together and they can say good game and they can say until next time. So, but it's a friendly rivalry for sure.
Some folks have better taste in football than others.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody's going to go out and poison a tree, right? Like, I mean, which has happened in this rivalry and has become...
Poison what?
Yeah, you haven't heard the Harvey Updike story where an Alabama fan got so mad about one of the results of the Iron Bowl when Auburn won, he went and poisoned one of Auburn's tumors trees, which are the trees located in downtown Auburn where
Jeez.
They roll them after a win, and they died. And it was a huge part of Auburn's football culture, and it's now become an infamous moment in Alabama football history.
On the flip side, though, Hannah, I understand that Auburn fans have also been very helpful. When there was a tornado in Tuscaloosa,
yes.
I believe?
Yes, that was my freshman year. And I remember being a student and, you know, it was cool to see that all the people that came, once the tornado hit, the first people I came into contact with, non-students, were Auburn fans. And they came to help recovery, help try to find people. And to me, that changed my heart towards them. It made me realize, hey, this is more than a game. They're real people and they're brothers and sisters just who root for another team.
Even a rivalry is a form of connection. Hannah Stevens is an analyst and contributor for Roll Tide Wire and University of Alabama's Emeritus Sign Girl. Hannah, we appreciate your time. Thanks for talking
to us. Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll continue in just a minute with Ben Flanagan of AL.com and Associate Professor Aaron Tarver of Emory University. We'll get to some more of your questions and comments as well, including some of your concerns about football fandom in general, considering some of the more recent discussions about the safety of the game. Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from The Real Real, the leading reseller of authenticated luxury consignment. Shop luxury clothing, accessories, and fine art at unreal prices from your favorite designers like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Cartier, and hundreds more. And The Real Real authenticates each item to ensure it's guaranteed authentic. Shop in-store, on the app, or at TheRealReal.com and receive 20% off select items with promo code REAL.
Hey there, it's Joshua. Thanks for listening to the 1A podcast. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a rating. That helps other people find the show. And don't forget, you can catch the news roundup at the end of every week.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back now to our conversation with Ben Flanagan and Aaron Tarver. Jeff tweeted, given the clear evidence that football can cause multiple concussions and long-term brain injuries, it astounds me that college institutions, which are supposed to be centers of lifetime learning, still support this violent sport. Professor Tarver, what about Jeff's comment?
I think it's a great question. So one of the ironies, I suppose, of football is that football actually was born in universities. So we have this long tradition of playing this game in universities that from the very beginning, by the way, from the early 1900s, was being objected to by faculty, both because it seemed to distract students from the things that they ought to be occupied with, but also because it was dangerous. And it was well known from its advent that football was dangerous. So while we talk about the role of football in creating this sense of connection between students, the sense of loyalty to the institution, which I think is one of the main reasons that university administrators like it so much, we need to also ask ourselves at what cost this is being obtained and who is bearing the brunt of those costs.
We did get a voicemail from a listener in Alabama who says that even though all of his family members are Crimson Tide fans, he himself is an alumnus of Auburn. He's not a fan of either team. Here's what Dwight left in our inbox.
Hey, my name's Dwight, and I'm from Op, Alabama. And, you know, the thing about Alabama football is I grew up and everybody in my family is an Alabama fan, and so I decided to go to Auburn. But, you know, as I graduated and got out and I started to review history more, I learned about the racist past. I learned that Alabama didn't have a black player until 1976, I think. And the more you learn, the more you realize it doesn't matter, Auburn or Alabama. I'm really not with either. At the end of the day, I still think those institutions are very racist, and a lot needs to change.
Yeah, Dwight, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Ben?
Well, you know, it's only been, what, 50-plus years now since the stand in the schoolhouse door, right, when George Wallace literally stood in the doorway of Foster Auditorium and tried to prevent the first two black students to enroll at Alabama. That's not a long time, like when you just size it all up. I mean, at times it feels like there have only been baby steps in terms of progress, obviously starting with desegregation. But, I mean, just in 2013, the university took measures to avoid future racial segregation and claims of discrimination in the Greek system. I mean, just this year, I covered a student protest for diversity and free speech in light of the dean of students suddenly resigning on campus. So there is occasional unrest still, and students make their voices known, and the administration claims that they're listening, and that conversation continues.
Let me play a clip from your episode on football and unity in Alabama of the podcast Bammers. It's a clip of Dr. Archie Wade, who was one of the first black professors that Alabama hired in 1970. He was one of three African-Americans to integrate Bryant-Denny Stadium, where the Crimson Tide plays, back in 1964. Here's Dr. Archie Wade talking about the experience of desegregating Bryant-Denny Stadium from the podcast Bammers.
Dr. Whittington and Nathaniel Howard and myself, we were the three people that he gave tickets to integrate their stadium. But we had to leave, you know, at halftime, because they, you know, throwing things and throwing ice and cups and all that and balls and all at us. And we just asked the guard to kind of help us get out. We would go ahead and leave. What was amazing, he did not give us any support at all. He didn't help us out, to get us out of the stadium, going through the tunnel or anything. He didn't help us do any of that. So that was kind of frightening for me, because I hadn't been through anything like this. You know, we were asked to go to the game because they want to integrate the stands, and that's what we did. That ended kind of tough. It had a lasting effect on me.
That was Dr. Archie Wade, one of the first black professors at U of A, hired in 1970, and one of three African-Americans who integrated the stadium in 1964. Unfortunately, he was not able to join us, but we wanted to make sure we included his story. Dr. Wade also said that he actually never ended up going to another Alabama football game again after this incident. Now, Professor Tarver, you have argued that sports fandom can uphold the structures that marginalize people of color. How's that?
Right. So I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I think it's quite important when we talk about the fact that there is this unity that's created, or there's a sense of we, that we're all part of this particular group. I think it's important that we ask, what is the character of that particular we that's being produced and reinforced? And certainly in the United States and in the American South especially, the history of the way that we has been produced has shifted over time. So it is worth, I think, remarking upon and taking really seriously how very long it took, especially Southern football fandom, to integrate. Prior to that integration that the caller mentioned of the teams, white fans across the South explicitly understood the victories of their all-white teams as being vindications in some way of segregation. And you can see evidence of this even in the sports writing that was taking place at the time in the Atlanta Constitution, which is the newspaper, or is now called the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. But post-integration, we've actually seen, of course, a shift in the way that these fan bases, which still demographically, we should say, are majority white fan bases, in the way that they are relating to the players on the field. So on one level, yes, we should celebrate, I think, the fact that white fan bases are now able to cheer young men of color who are you know, winning for their teams. But at the same time, when we look closer at the relationship between many of these white fans and the young men of color that they cheer for, the relationship is actually a little bit more complicated than that. So very often, for example, social scientists who have studied white fans and the way that they talk about those players, for example, they're much more likely to praise the physicality of young black players than they are to praise their intelligence. They're much more likely, conversely, to praise, say, white quarterbacks as having a high football IQ or of being a guy of great character. And so I think it's really important when we celebrate this we, or this unity that's being produced through sports fandom, we also are interrogating what messages we are reinforcing about race and racial hierarchy in the United States.
Ben, what about other dividing lines? I sometimes feel like places like Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi have made different kinds of strides in dealing with race because they've had to, because they've been under such a microscope. And you mentioned Alabama. To many Americans, they think about what happened in Birmingham and Montgomery and Selma, and so you've kind of had no choice but to deal with race. There are other dividing lines like religion, particularly Islamophobia, with LGBTQ students. There are so many other kinds of fault lines that we're trying to bridge. How do you see that in terms of, okay, we've had time to talk about and deal with and work through race. We may not be done, but now there's all these other things too, and it's all still layered on top of trying to cheer for the Crimson Tide. It can get, I imagine, kind of dizzying after a while.
For sure. And again, there have obviously been major signs of progress, but at times it can feel like a slog. But
I mean, could I go to an Alabama game holding my boyfriend's hand?
I hate that I have to hesitate to answer that question. I think you could, because again, I think that for the most part, Alabama football serves as escapism for a lot of people, like the same way movies can. At the same time, I'm not going to tell you that somebody isn't going to come up to a gay couple, right, who's holding hands on campus and say something to them. I'm not going to tell you that that won't happen multiple times on a game day. I think it's less likely to happen on a game day than just your average day, maybe in Alabama and on campus. But yeah, it's complicated.
Before we go, Professor Tarver, what would you like to see evolve in football fandom culture? If there's one thing, very briefly before we go, what would you like to see?
The biggest thing for me is I would like to see fans taking more seriously the reality of the young men playing these games as full human individuals. And I would like to see fans take more seriously the fact that these people are people just like we are. They have a right to express themselves politically. They have a right to be concerned about their long-term brain health. And we should support them in those endeavors.
Finally, Ben, if I go to a University of Alabama game for the first time, what's the one biggest thing you want me to keep in mind?
It's going to be bigger than you think it's going to be, right? I think the one reaction that people have when they walk into that stadium, when they walk onto the quad, where you just walk into this sea of tailgating, is that this is massive. And this, yeah, I think you sort of immediately understand the gravity and importance of it as soon as you see it.
Ben Flanagan, entertainment and sports producer for AL.com and the host of the podcast Bammers. Ben, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
And Aaron Tarver, associate professor of philosophy at Emory. Her book is called The I in Team, Sports Fandom and the Reproduction of Identity. Thank you, Professor.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Haley Blassingame and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.